Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to our Thursday morning class at the Young Israel of Woodmere. I hope everyone's enjoying a healthy and stable winter. Last week we were only on Zoom. Thank you, everybody, for joining me on Zoom. Thank you today for joining in person and via Zoom. So we have a very, very interesting, fascinating class prepared. It's going to take at least two shiurim to get through the material. I'm not sure if it's going to take two or two and a half, but definitely two. You must have a handout. The handout is going to be following us for this class and the next class, and we'll see if we finish it in two classes, which is my hope. So please bring it back next week. I'm not making another five. I'm not asking Young Israel Woodmere to make another five-page packet. Please bring it back to Shear next week with you. So what I want to talk about today is further Moshe at the burning bush. We spoke about it last week on Zoom. If you missed the Shear, it's on YU Torah. I got really, really nice feedback on last week's Shear. Know thy name, reach thy potential. Neshama, middle two letters are shame. We spoke about Rabbi Zev Lef, the four names that a person has. And we identified that the first thing that God says to Moshe at the bush is not take off your shoes, the place is holy. We're going to Eretz Yisrael. The first thing Hashem really says to Moshe at the burning bush is your name. He calls his name, and that was last week's shiur. Today I want to continue this learning of Moshe at the burning bush, specifically the next thing that Hashem says to him. So the first thing he says to him is Moshe, Moshe, and the very next thing he says to him is going to be the topic of our shiur. Moshe has been chosen as the redeemer and the leader. Shmos ve'era bo b'shalach are the story of Shibud Mitzrayim and Yitzias Mitzrayim, and Moshe from the time he's born in Shmos Parak Beis, the beginning of during the Shiva Mitzrayim, he stays with us all the way through his death in Vizos HaBracha at the end of Sefer Devarim. He is our most important leader, our most everlasting leader. It's Torah Tzivu Lanu Moshe, Marasha Kilis Yaakov, Devarim 33:4. He taught us the Torah. This isn't something ancient and antiquated that's not relevant. Moshe Rabbeinu, from the time of his appointment at the burning bush, becomes the leader for all generations and the rabbi for all generations. We call Moshe Rabbeinu. We call Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. So I want to look more at the instructions to Moshe at the burning bush, the first instructions at the burning bush, and this is really the moment when he is propelled into greatness and propelled into leadership. So I'm going to begin by quoting from Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, the Rav Zatzal, from the Sefer Vision and Leadership. If you just came in, you must have a copy of the handout for these classes. It is going to be very much text-based. Of course, I will be reading all the sources and explaining them, but this is going to be a very text-based two-part series. So, At the Burning Bush, I'm quoting from a piece by the Rav in the Sefer. The title is At the Burning Bush. So, actually, if you look in your Chumash, okay, turn to 222, Perek Beis, Pasuk Chaf Beis. Okay, Perek Beis, Pasuk Chaf Beis. I don't have the same chumash as you. I just have a small chumash because we're not really going to be using the chumash so much. We're going to be using our handout much more. But could someone tell me 222 in Shemos? What page is that? I can't hear. What page?
299.
299? Thank you. Page 299. Okay? For in your chumashim. If you're at home, Perek Beis, Pasuk Chaf Beis. Okay? So Vatele Bain Vayikrashmo Girsham ki Amar Girha Yisi Baratz Nachria. So Moshe and Sipara have just had a child and he calls his name Girsham because I've been a stranger in a strange land. Parak Pasakhov Gimma. We're going to look at the sequence of three topics here. One, Gershom was just born, and now it was in those great days. The king of Egypt died. The children of Israel groaned from the work. They called out. And their cries ascended to God from the work. Vayishma Elokim esna akasam. God heard their groans. Vayizkar Elokim es briso. God remembered his covenant. As Avram, as Yitzchak, as Yaakov. Vayar Elokim es bnei Israel. Elokim saw the bnei Israel. Vayeda Elokim, Elokim knew. So we have Gershom is born, and then we have the description of the children of Israel crying and groaning and sighing from their work. And God remembers, and God hears, and God sees. And then, Paragimo Pasuk Aleph, Umosha. Very next word is Moshe Hayaroa Etzon Yisro Chosno. He was a shepherd for the flocks of Yisro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he leads the flocks into the desert. He comes to Har Elokim Choreva. So I guess let's just continue until we get up to the first command. And an angel of Hashem appears to him in a flame of fire from the burning bush. I'm in Perek Gimel Pasuk Beis. And he sees, and behold, the sneh is burning with fire, but the burning bush is not being consumed. It's not being ukal, from the word ochal. It's not being consumed. And Moshe says, I will turn and I will see this great vision. Why is this bush not being consumed and burning up? And Hashem sees that he turned to see, and Hashem calls him from the burning bush, Moshe, Moshe, which is what we spoke about last week. And then Moshe says, Hineni, here I am. And then, the focus of our whole shir is going to be Perek Gimel Pasuk Hei. Vayomer, Al Tikrav Halom, do not approach close. Shal Na'alacha Me'al Raglacha, take your shoes off of your feet. Yamakom Asher Ata Amed Olav, because the place upon which you stand on it, Admas Kodesh, who is holy ground. That's the first statement of God after the Moshe, Moshe, which is what we spoke about last week, and then Pasuk Vav. Pasuk Vav is also relevant. Vayomer Anochi Elokei Avicha, I am the God of your father, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Vayaster Moshe Panav, and Moshe hid his face. Ki Arei Mehabia Mehabid Elokim. He was afraid to look at God. Hashem says, I've surely seen the affliction of my people. I've heard their cries because of the taskmasters. I know their pain. I'm coming down and we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so this is the sequence. Now, if you look, turn back between 222, Perek Beis, Pasuchav Beis, when Gershom is born, and Perek Beis, Pasuchav Gimel, there is a space. Okay, do you see it in that chumash? I don't have the same chumash as you. You see the space. Okay, let's begin with a piece by Rav Soloveitchik where we talk about that space. The Torah records, says the Rav, several stories about Moshe's early life. First, what are we told first? About his birth and the way he was saved from drowning in the Nile by Pharaoh's daughter, who adopted him, and by Miriam, who brought him back to his mother, right? She says to the Egyptian princess, should I go call a wet nurse from the Hebrews? And he's actually taken back to his mother for the 2 or 3 years while he is nursing. The next thing we're told is about Moshe killing an Egyptian who was striking a Jew. He hides him in the sand. And then we're told about Moshe reprimanding a Jew who was beating a fellow Jew. Next, we hear about Moshe's flight from Egypt. He has to run away. He's afraid of Paro. He becomes the son-in-law of Yisro, the priest of Midjad. Moshe fathers a son who he names Gershom. So that's really an overview of Moshe's life from Perek Beis when he is born through Pasuk Chav Beis. After the Torah tells us about the naming of Gershom, which we looked at the Pasuk, there is a petucha in the Torah scroll. There is a blank space, and then that's followed by a new paragraph or a new section, which is what you see in your Chumash between 222 and 223. There is a space, an open petucha, liftoch. There's an open blank space. After the blank space, we are told, it came to pass in the course of many days, the king of Egypt died. By the way, Rashi says here, he did not die. He had sara'as, and he was shechting Jewish babies and bathing in their blood. And the children of Israel groaned, and they cried out, and their cries rose up to God because of the bondage. Why is there a petucha, an open space? What is that gap between naming of Gershom, Perek Beis, Pasuk Chav Beis, and the next Pasukim, which tell us that the king of Egypt died and the groans of the children of Israel? Says Rav Soloveitchik, the petucha signifies a new reality is about to emerge. The bondage in Egypt had been a time of Hester Panim, which we translate as concealment of the divine face, the hiding of God's face. Hester Panim is a time, a period, when man feels completely alienated from God. My grandfather writes in his Holocaust memoirs, we cried, but to us the heavens were closed. Yet all of us together vigorously pleaded for help. Hester Panim is a time when God's face is hidden, a period when man feels completely alienated from God. During a time of Hester Panim, which is literally the concealment of the face, Hester is hidden, Panim is face, man becomes like any other living organism, like a brute in the field or the forest. He is no longer under the unique, divine, individual protection of the Almighty, which is exactly, by the way, what Rashi says in Devarim 31:17-18, when you have the condition of Hester Panim outlined in the Torah, that's what Rashi says. Rashi says there, it is as if there is no Hashkacha anymore. So Rav Soloveitchik says, during this time, he becomes like a brute or a beast of the field. He is no longer under the individual, unique protection of the Almighty. During the time of Hester Panim, panim, the Jews' suffering becomes routine. Every day is a day of suffering all over again. Says the Rav, quote, survivors of the Nazi concentration camps relate that after a time, they began to think their lives just had to be like this, that it was useless to complain, ridiculous to cry, pointless to scream. Hester Panim is a time of divine silence. However, after many days, Vayihi bayamim harabim, God heard their groaning. Vayishma Elokim es nakasim. God remembered. Vayizkra Elokim es briso es Avram es Yitzchak ves Yaakov. All of a sudden, after many days, it is no longer Hester Panim. These three psukim, 2:23-25, psukim Perek Beis, Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet, Chav Hey, are the time of transition. From Hester Panim, everything that comes before in Sefer Shknos is Hester Panim, to Gilu Shechina, everything that comes before Perek Beis, Pasuk of Gimel, is Hester Panim. Everything that comes from Perek Gimel, Pasuk Aleph, is Gilu Shechina. Those two conditions are opposite. Hester Panim, God is hidden. Gilu Shechina, God is revealed. Suddenly, the period of Hester Panim, these verses are telling us, is over because God saw, God heard, God knew, God remembered. Hester Panim is over. The word Vayeda, Vayeda Elohim, the last words of Perek Beis, and God knew, have multiple meanings. But in our context, Vayeda Elohim means God shared. He became involved. He now participated in the suffering of his people. He was now involved once again in their destiny and in their future. This is the concept of Shechinta Begalusa. There's a Kabbalistic concept, really, of Shechinta Begalusa, that when we are in exile, the divine presence, Shechina Begalus, Shechinta Begalusa, in Aramaic, who had very often an Aleph ends a word. So it means Shechina Begalus. The divine presence is in exile along with us. Says the Rav, in Galus, when Shechinta Begalusa, the people were strangers to him. There was no involvement on the part of God. There was complete estrangement, complete alienation. This is the condition of Hester Panim. We don't like to contemplate it. We don't like to talk about it, but it's part of our reality of our destiny. At different periods in time, Rachmana Litzlan, the condition of Hester Panim is when God turns away from the Bnei Yisrael. And yet, after Yamim Rabim, after many dark and silent years, God once again became involved in the destiny of his people. That's what these three psukim are. They are a bridge from Hester Panim to Gilui Shechina. And that is why this section is presented as a new paragraph. That's why there's a petucha. That section is finished. New paragraph. Something open. What are we opening? A new time period. We're opening a new reality. We're opening the door to God is going to share in our suffering. This represents a new situation. So that answers this open space. It indicates the opening of a new reality in the destiny of Knesset Yisrael. But once the Almighty, says the Rav, turned his countenance, Ya'er Hashem Pana Ve'lecha, he turns his countenance towards the suffering of his people, day now begins to dawn. Night is Hester Panim, night is Galus, day is Gilui Shechina, and day represents Geula. The day has begun to dawn. The only thing missing is a Redeemer. There is no Goel. And so, Hester Panim, through Perek Beis, Pasuk HaBeis, Psucha, because we open up a new reality, or God opens up a new reality, which is Perek Beis, Psukim Chav Gimel through Chav Hei. There's only one thing missing. What's missing is the Goel. There's one thing missing, the Redeemer. And therefore, what's the very next word in the Chumash? Umoshe. And Moses. So what is Hashem saying? I've woken up, so to speak. I know, I see, I remember, I hear. But what's missing is the human agent that will be the shaliach of Hashem. Moshe, who was born in the beginning of Perek Beis. Moshe, who will be with us all the way to the end of his Osa Bracha. Moshe, who is our rabbi, Rabbeinu. Moshe, who teaches us, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Moshe, whose Torah is MS and Moshe MS. Moshe, who comes in every generation as our rabbi. It's not that we left him at the end of his Osa Bracha. In Perek Lamed Daled, he said goodbye, Moshe. No, he's the Goel and the teacher in every generation. And therefore, after we're told that Hashem woke up, so to speak, and we're moving from Hester Panim to Gilui Shechina, the very next word of Chumash is u'Moshe. That's the missing ingredient, and this is how the Rav explains this sequence. So the Rav says, the only thing missing is the Redeemer. Therefore, the very next verse continues, with the word Moshe, the Redeemer will be Moshe. So it's not just that God Stam chose him. You have to see the background and the situation into which Moshe is presented to us. Now that we understand that, we look back in the Chumash, please, Parak Gimel. So we have gone through that sequence, and now u'Moshe. And last week we spoke all about the name and Moshe, Moshe. And here you see the whole Parak Gimel is introduced. This whole new section is introduced with the word, the name Moshe. Moshe was a shepherd. I know we did these psukim already. Look back, Parak Gimel, pasuk Aleph, for the flocks of Yisro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he leads the sheep into the desert. He comes to Har Elokim Chareva. He's standing at Har Sinai, and the angel of God appears to him from a flame of fire from the burning bush, and he looks, and he sees the bush is burning, and the bush is not being consumed. And Moshe says, you know, I'm going to turn, and I'm going to see this great vision. Why is this bush not being consumed? And Hashem sees that he turns to see, and God calls him from the bush, Moshe, Moshe, Hineni. Vayomer, Al Tikrav Halom. Do not come close. Shal na'alacha me'al raglacha. Remove your shoes from upon your feet. Ki hamakom asher ata omed alav ad mas kodeshu. Because the place on which you stand is holy ground. Vayomer, and he said, Anochi Elokei Avicha, I am the God of your father. Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Ayaster Moshe panav. Moshe hides his face. It's an interesting juxtaposition. Now, God is waking up and revealing himself. He's coming out of Hester Panim. What does Moshe do? Moshe is going into Hester Panim, if you will. Ki yarei mehabit Elokim, he's afraid to look at God. Okay, this whole two-part series, at least, perhaps two and a half, I don't know how long it'll take me. I'm not going to rush the sources. We're going to go through every source that I prepared. It took me a very long time to prepare this year, but it was truly a labor of love and absolutely fascinating. So this whole thing was the impetus or the springboard, the inspiration for this whole year was the following Dvar Torah that my son told Friday night at the Shabbos table. And I was just so taken and truly fascinated by it. And while it was still Shabbos, I took out my Mikros Gedolos and I just started to look over the Mefarshim because I was so taken by this Dvar Torah. I went to be Menachem Aval. What day was it? I go be Menachem Aval Tuesday. Tuesday afternoon, I went to be Menachem Aval, Mr. Lloyd Kilson. So I didn't have the opportunity, he was sitting Shiva for his brother. I didn't have the opportunity to tell him the Dvar Torah. But as I was leaving, I had the opportunity to tell his wife. I said, please, if you can later, I don't know if she did, I hope so, please share this with your husband, because he was talking about some of the halachas of Avelo. So it was a very appropriate insight to share. So I'm going to tell you the Dvar Torah that my son Yitzchak Yonatan goes to Hank. Oh, they're on Zoom. I hope they're going to be back in person soon. The children need very badly in-person learning. I'm not blaming anyone. Understand, it's a hard few weeks here already. Anyway, he's doing very well, Baruch Hashem, in Hank in Uniondale. And his Chumash Rabbi is Rabbi Yisrael Chesser, if anyone knows him, from Muncie. My son has told me multiple times, Mommy, you would love Rabbi Chesser's class. And sometimes he'll say over to Dvar Torah the Shas table, and I say, I want to be in that class. So Rabbi Chesser said the most amazing Dvar Torah, which I was so taken with. For the people at home, I'm going to start screen sharing. I just have to find it. 1 second. Where is it? Okay, I need to see who's not hiding behind the black box. Can you see that it says Shmos 3:5 at the top of my screen? Yes? Okay, very good. I'm going to just make it bigger for the people at home. Please remember to bring your handout back next week. Okay. So you can look at your handout, everyone who's sitting in person. We're at the top of page 1. Also, my handouts have Seamus. In the beginning, I was trying to take out the Seamus. There is so much material here. It was just taking me too long. There's a Seamus box in the Young Israel of Woodmere hallway. When we're finished this series, if you don't want to keep it, put it there. If you want to keep it, call Kavod, just be careful with it. I mean, I want you to keep it. I worked very hard on it. But if you don't want to, put it in Seamus here when we're done our learning. So the first source you have is Pasuk, Parak Gimel, Pasuk Hei, okay? And Hashem said, do not come close. Remove your shoes from upon your feet, because the place upon which you are standing is holy ground. So my son said, that Rabbi Chesser, my son says, is anybody familiar with Yehoshua and Yericho? So I said, yes, to me, because I taught Nach Yomi Sefer Yehoshua. If you're following me, I'm now teaching Nach Yomi Divrei HaYamim. Bad, oh my gosh, mind-blowing, fascinating. So, okay. So my son said, does anyone know the story of the angel that appeared to Yehoshua by Yericho? I said, yeah. So my son said, Rabbi Chesser said, why was Yehoshua, so at the table I went to get the Yehoshua, why was Yehoshua commanded to remove one shoe, but Moshe was commanded to remove both shoes? So let's look at Sefer Yehoshua. The next source on your handle, it says Yehoshua. It's right at the end of Perek Hey in Sefer Yehoshua. So Kim Yur Gimel through Tesvav, like you see on the screen, okay? Vayihi Bios Yehoshua Biriricho, Vayisa Einem. So the whole story of Sefer Yehoshua is crossing the Jordan and conquering the land and then dividing the land. But there's one specific instance when an angel of God appears to Yehoshua, and the message to Yehoshua is very, very similar to the message given to Moshe. Vayi Bios Yehoshua Biriricho. And of course, Yehoshua takes the mantle of leadership after Moshe. And it was when Yehoshua was in Yericho, Vayisa Einem, he lifts his eyes, Vayar, Vihine Ish Omed the Negdo, v'charbo shlufo biyado. Interesting that Moshe is standing at Choreva, and Yehoshua sees a man with a cherev in his hand. Okay, so he lifts his eyes and he sees a man standing before him, and a sword is drawn in his hand. And Yehoshua goes and he says, "So are you on my team or you're on my enemy's team? Are you fighting with me or are you fighting against me?" Vayomer lo ki ani Sar Tzva Hashem Atabasi. I am an emissary from God. I am a host of God. I have now come. And Yehoshua falls upon his face on the ground and he prostrates and he says to him, Ma Adoni Medaber Avdo, do you have a message for me? Why are you here? What's the message? Watch the lesson. Next pasuk. Vayomer Sar Tzva Hashem al Yehoshua. Oh, look what he says, and I put them on your handle for you so you can compare and contrast. And you, in fact, have a boldage, Kmos 3:5, and then Yehoshua Parakei, and the angel says, Shal na'achome al raglecha. Well, these words should sound very familiar. Ki amakom asher ato amed alav kodeshu. You see where I am. I'm showing you here where I'm up to. Compare and contrast the two verses. The angel says to Yehoshua, remove your shoe from your foot, because the place upon which you are standing is holy. Doesn't say holy ground, it says Kodeshu. Vayas Yehoshua Kane. Yehoshua did so. So my son sat at the table, the Rabbi Chesk pointed out, Yehoshua had to remove one shoe, whereas Moshe was told to remove both shoes. If you look at the psukim, Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha, God says to Moses, remove your shoes. But to Yehoshua, shal na'alcha, remove your shoe. So, furthermore, before we answer, okay? One second. Okay. Before we answer, we have to look at the next pasuk. And the next pasuk Vav says, look inside your chumash, Vayomer Anochi Elokei Avicha, I am the God of your father. Remember, don't close your chumash, okay? You have a chumash, you have your hand out. Before we answer the question, okay, according to Rabbi Chesser, now, Anochi Elokei Avicha, I am the God of your father, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, Vayaster Moshe Panav. What is, in pasuk Vav, Elokei Avicha, I am the God of your father? He says to him, I am the God of Avram, the God of Yitzchak, the God of Yaakov. This is Moshe's first revelation by God. Moshe doesn't know. The Medrash says, Rav Salavitcher quotes it also, the Medrash says that when Hashem appeared to Moshe, it was the voice of Amram. It was the voice of Amram that he heard calling from him. So he doesn't have experience talking to God yet. This is the first introduction. So God says, I am the God of your father first, then the God of Avram, the God of Yitzchak, the God of Yaakov. What is I am the God of your father? So we know, and for example, you could look it up, which we're not going to do right now, and I didn't put it on your handout, but I'm giving you the source, okay? In Bereishis, Perek Chof Ches, Pasuk Yud Gimel, when Yaakov's having his famous dream, Chof Ches, chapter 28, Yud Gimel, verse 13, Rashi tells us there, and you could look it up, it's on my own sheer notes, in my own footnote, Rashi tells us there that Hashem does not attach his name to a person while he is still living. You want to see the source? Bereishis, Chof Ches, Yud Gimel, with Rashi. Rashi. I have it right here. Don't look it up now. Turn the page after Shir if you would like. There's a principle that Hashem does not attach his name to someone while he is still alive. Elokei Avram, because Avram is dead. Elokei Yitzchak, because Yitzchak is dead. Elokei Yaakov, because Yaakov is no longer alive. So what is Elokei Avicha if we follow this principle? I am the God of your father. Who is Moshe's father? Amram. But if Hashem is saying, I am Elokei Avicha, and we know, to quote Rashi over there, Lo metzinu b'mikra sheyichir HaKadosh Baruch Hu shmo al tzadikim b'chayehem. Lichtov Elokei Ploni. I'm quoting Rashi. I'm going to repeat it again. Lo metzinu b'mikra. We do not find anywhere in the scriptures sheyichir HaKadosh Baruch Hu shmo al tzadikim b'chayehem lichtov Elokei Ploni. God does not attach his name to the righteous in their life to write, I am the father, the God of so-and-so. So if God said Elokei Avicha, what does that mean? What is God telling him? What did you say?
Amram is dead.
Oh, Moshe has just been informed that Amram is no longer alive. This is the first time, Rabbi Chester said, that Moshe is informed that his father has died. How do we know? Because it says Elokei Avicha. It can't be referring to the patriarchs because it says Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Ve'Elokav, Ve'Elokei Yaakov. So it must be somebody else. It is somebody else. Who is it referring to? Amram. And since we know Rashi quotes it in Bereishis Chav Ches Yud Gimel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not attach his name to the righteous in their lifetime, if God is attaching his name to Moshe's father, who is Amram, it must be that Amram is no longer alive. And so the implied message, even though it's not explicitly stated, is God is informing Moshe, your father Amram has passed away. Amram, like you said, his father is dead. Moshe is, now knows that Amram is no longer alive. And therefore, Rabbi Chester said, that's why Moshe is told to remove his shoes. And that's the first thing Hashem tells him. Shalma Alecha me'al raglecha. Move your shoes from upon your feet, because he has just been informed that he is no longer a son of his father who is alive. He's a son of his father who is dead. So I found this fascinating. We still have to understand why Yoshua was told to take off one shoe, which we're going to look at the Mefarshim during the course of our exploration of this fascinating topic. But so Shabbos morning, I was looking through the Mikros Gedolos and just looking through the sources. And then I said to my son later, I said, you know, maybe that explains the 7 days at the burning bush. Moshe argued for 7 days at the burning bush. One second. If I... 1 minute. Okay, Moshe argued for 7 days at the burning bush. I'm not going to find the exact Rashi now because I thought I had folded the page for you, but I don't want to take the time. Moshe argued for 7 days at the burning bush. Oh, I just found it. Okay, it's Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud. For your reference, Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud, Rashi tells us 7 days are at the burning bush. So I said to my son, maybe that's the significance of the 7 days. It's like a period of Shiva. So my son said, oh yeah, Rabbi Chester said that. I forgot to tell you that. So I was clearly taken by this Svar Torah. I never heard this before. I thought it was really fascinating. Take off your shoes. Your father has died. 7 days now explains that Moshe has a period of Shiva, which led me to then go look through so many different sources, which I found fascinating. So with that, let's begin on our handout. Okay, under the line. So the line was the setup for Shir. We began with the Rav. We began on top with our Pasuk and Shlos. Then we went to the Pesukim in Sefer Yehoshua. And now let us look under the line on your handout. I'm like in the middle of page one. So it says Shemos 3:5. That is the Pasuk that we are looking at. Per Gimel Pasuk Hey, which is the whole focus of this year. Rashi. Okay? Next source on your handout. So Rashi needs to tell us, what does shal mean? What kind of word is shal? So Rashi said, shlof vehotzei. Artsko translates that as slip off and remove, or take out. Slip off and take out, or slip off and remove. Kimo, like Pasuk says in Devarim, v'nashal habarzel, which means that the iron axe head will slip off of its handle. Ki yishal zeitach, when your olives drop off. Okay? So two different proofs that this shin lamid means to take off and to remove. What is Targum Yonah? 1 second. Okay, let's keep going. Targum Yonah, okay? Va'amar. Lo Tikrav Halcha, Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, who is buried in Amuka. It's an Aramaic translation of the an Aramaic interpretation that's very Midrashic based, much more Midrashic and flowery than Targum Unklus. Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, Va'amar. Okay, lo tikrav halcha, do not come close to here. Shaluf seinach, remove your sandal, me al raglach, from upon your foot, your feet, I guess. Arum, because asra da ant ka'im aloi, the land on which you are standing, asar kadeshu, this is a holy land. Va'alo ant asid the kalba oraisa, we know what oraisa is. What is oraisa? They make word for Torah. And upon this ground, in the future, you will accept the Torah. So keep in mind, this is not indicated in the Pasuk. Remember, I told you, the Targum Yonasan is a very Midrashic-based interpretation of Chumash. And the Pasuk, it doesn't say anything about receiving the Torah. It says that the land is holy. So take off your shoes. So Targum Yonasan is explaining why it says the land is holy. What is the source of holiness? Va'alo ant asi the Kabbalah oraisa. Because in the future, upon this land, in the future you will receive the Torah. Lemalapayasa lefnei Yisrael, and you will teach it to the Bnei Yisrael. So Targum Yonasan explains why he needed to take off his shoes. The ground is holy. This is the future site of Kabbalah Torah, and you will then teach it to the Bnei Yisrael. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos, it's the last source on page one. For those here in person, on the screen, you just see what I'm highlighting for you. So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos, Samech Beis Amad Beis, Ditanya. It was taught in the Braisa. Lo Yikanes Adam Lahar Habayis. A person should not enter into Har Habayis. Lo Bemaklo Shabiyado. Not with your staff in your hand. So when you ascend to Har Habayis, not today. However, in temple times, when you went up to Har Habayis, there was a certain Kedushas HaMakom that dictated your behavior, your appearance, and how you show reverence for the Almighty. So you should not go up to Har Habayis with your walking stick in your hand. It's not like you're not taking a hike in the Carmel Forest. You're on Har Habayis. V'lo b'mina alo shebiraglo, and not with your shoes on your feet. V'lo b'ma'os hatziruim lo b'sidno, and you can't have your money bam up in your money bag, okay? Shouldn't look like you're taking a hike through the forest, and you shouldn't look like this is such a casual place. It shouldn't look like you're there to go shopping with your purse. Ube pundaso muf shalas l'acharav, and you shouldn't have your money belt slung behind him. Velo ya asena kapenedarya. And you shouldn't also make it a shortcut, okay? So you have to get from, the old city to Har HaTzofim. So instead of taking the long route, you want to go the fast way. So you say, Har Habayis is much faster, so I'm going to go this way. So you see that there's a certain degree of reverence that we must show when we ascend to Har Habayis. And you learn, interestingly, that spitting is not allowed, and this is learned from a kal v'chomer from wearing your shoes, okay? And I'll just spit also on Har Habayis, which is a kal v'chomer from you're not allowed to wear shoes. Uma min al she'en bo derech bizayon amra Torah. Where do you learn? Where do Chazal learn out that it is forbidden to wear shoes atop Har Habayis? From where do they learn it out? Our Pasuk. The Gemara just quoted it. How do you learn out you're not allowed to wear shoes when you ascend to Har Habayis? Says the Gemara, because the Pasuk says in Sefer Shmos, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Hey, take your shoes from upon your feet because the place upon which you stand is holy grounds. Gemara is saying we learn about spitting on Har Habayis, the Kal V'chomer from shoes, if you're not allowed to wear shoes, which is not Derech Bizayon, it's not a way of scorn, it's not a way of, delegitimizing the place, but it's still aser rikika shehi derech bizayon lo kol shekein. So spitting, which is by way of bizayon, it's not nice. It indicates something. You're cheapening something. It's not respectful. So how much more so you should not spit. So obviously there are very many halachos as to how you can and can't go onto Har Habayis. For that you must consult with the Gedolei Hadar. Today most told you're not allowed to go onto Har Habayis anyways. But if you go, you shouldn't have your staff in your hand. You shouldn't have your shoes on your feet. You shouldn't have your money bound up in your purse. You shouldn't sling your money belt over you. You shouldn't make it a shortcut. And you're also not allowed to spit. If you're not allowed to wear shoes, choose, like we learned from Moshe's encounter at the burning bush, which is not a derech bizayon, how much more so may you not spit, which is a derech bizayon. So we see that this is the source that the Gemara brings down for the prohibition not to wear shoes atop Har Habayis. With that, turn your page, please, to the top of page 2. And let us look at the Das Akenim Balei Tosfos. Okay, please. So the Das Akenim says as follows. Shal, again, to take off. Kachutzrach lomer me'al raglecha. So he said remove, and he said remove it from your feet, your shoes, from your feet. Mishum, sheyesh na'al shehu al hayad. There's a kind of na'al that goes actually on the hand. So today we would not call that a shoe, okay? Today we would call that a glove. But apparently there used to be some kind of covering for the hand, protection for the hand, that was called a na'al as well. And ubalaz in old French, gant. Okay? I'm not sure even how you pronounce it. I think gant, it's not a Hebrew word. It's old French. Rashi will often say how you say something in this way as well, outside of Lashon HaKodesh. So it was called gant, but it was a covering for the hand. So the Das Akenim is saying, why exactly did Hashem say, because no words in the Chumash are superfluous, which I always reiterate to you, why did he say, Shalna Alecha Me'al Raglecha? That's the question of the Das Akenim. Me'al Raglecha is superfluous. If you tell me, take off your shoe, then you shouldn't. If you tell me today, take off my shoes, I don't need to ask you, are my shoes on my head or my hand or my chest or my feet? If you tell me, take off your shoe, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about take them off of your feet. So the question of the Das Akenim is the words Me'al Raglecha seem superfluous. If you say Shal Na'alacha, and Hashem doesn't waste any words, you don't need to say Me'al Raglecha. So he's clarifying that it's not superfluous because there's a kind of Na'al that actually goes where? On the hand. So obviously we don't call it that anymore. Vuhu Na'al Shenotso Ba'al Legoa. And this is the Na'al that Boaz gave to the Goa, Megillus Rus, Ish Na'alo Vinasan Lere'ehu. So when Boaz redeemed, if you will, Rus, and had the right to marry her, the Na'al that they used there was the kind on the hand. Okay, but he's explaining why Me'al Raglecha V'gam Echshav Regilim Hasarim V'Hashiltonim L'Knos Begant Shalahem. And even today, says the Das Kenim, the officers and ministers, prominent people, are used to doing transactions and acquiring things with this glove, what I'm calling a glove, with this na'al that goes upon the feet, which is called a gant. Uma Shemakshim Shahutrach Khan. Does everyone know where I am? Top of page 2, the Das Akenim. Okay. Uma Shemakshim Shahutrach Khan Lishlov Shnei Raglav. Okay. Here, he was required to take off two shoes. The Yehoshu, to make barefoot both feet, Lashlov Shnei Raglav, to make barefoot both feet. The Yehoshua be Yericho lo chalatz ala rega achar. By Yeshua in Yericho, he only had to do chalitza, if you will, for one foot. He only took off one shoe. Hainu, mishum dekan kadma shchina lemoshe, velolo. In this instance, the shchina was there before Moshe. The shchina was waiting for Moshe. Moshe's there. And he appears, and Moshe's walking, and his sheep are walking, and all of a sudden he sees the Shekhinah. So in this instance, the Shekhinah was already there. Hashem is waiting, so to speak, for Moshe. Hashem preceded Moshe. You know, think of, I don't know, you have a meeting with someone in a certain restaurant, okay? So you have a date. So sometimes you're there before the date, and sometimes the date is there before you. Oh, sometimes you arrive exactly at the same time, but let's say one is there first waiting, or the other one is there first waiting. So in the case of Moshe at the burning bush, Hashem was waiting for Moshe. He called Mashchina LeMoshe. Lo, Hashem preceded Moshe. Moshe didn't precede God. V'sham kadam Yoshua v'kana mekomo. But in that instance, Yoshua was there first. Yoshua acquired the place. He was there first, so to speak, and then the angel came. Whereas by Moshe, the angel of God and God were there first, and then Moshe appeared at the place. So perhaps it means Yoshua was already on the holy ground of Eretz Yisrael. Then the angel appeared to him. But by Moshe, he chanced upon God. God said, I was here first. This is my place. By Yoshua v'kana mekomo, he acquired the place. So God is saying, this is my place. You came to me. I Yahweh was here first to show the added degree of holiness because the Shekhinah was already there. It preceded Moshe. Moshe is told to remove not one, but two shoes to show the added degree of holiness that the Shekhinah was there before him and waiting for him, so to speak. Let's look at Medrash Shmos Rabbah. This is the next source on your handout. Okay? Parsha Beis Siman Vav. Shalom the Alacha. Kol makom shehashchina nigles, asur bin ilas hasandal. Any place where the Shechina is revealed, it is asur, it is forbidden to be wearing shoes. V'chein b'Yehoshua, and the Medrash connects these two instances, one by Moshe and one by Yehoshua. And the Medrash says so too, like we see by Yehoshua, shal na'alacha, remove your shoe. So that's another instance where you see where God appears, you have to remove your shoe. Furthermore, v'kein ha-kohanim, go to the priest, lo shim shu b'mikdosh ala yechevim. When the kohanim would serve in the Beis HaMikdosh, they had to serve barefoot. We know soon we're going to be up to Truma Tetzava Kitisa v'yalka pekudek. The kiyar was made for the washing of the hands of the feet, the hands and feet of the kohanim. So we see, it says in Medrash, any place where the Shechina is revealed, you're not allowed to wear shoes. Like by Moshe, like by Yehoshua. And another proof, says Medrash, is the kohanim in the Mikdosh served Yechefim barefoot. Oh, the Eitz Yosef is a commentary to the Medrash, which is the next source on your handout. So the Eitz Yosef says, okay, wait, the Eitz Yosef is commenting not on the Pasuk. The Eitz Yosef comments on the Medrash. Okay? Kol makom shehashchina nigles. So the Medrash has just told you, not any place, I'm sort of like one third of the way down on page two of your handout, okay? Every place where the Shekhinah is revealed, says the Eitz Yosef, v'lo mipnei shehamakom mitzad atzmo haya mekudash. So you have to be careful. Why do you have to remove your shoes? Is the place itself holy? Is there inherent holiness in the ground? V'lo ka'amar ad maskodash, ela mipnei shehashchina asher bo achshav. The place becomes holy. It's not that the ground is objectively in and of itself holy. It's holy because, why? The Shekhinah has come in this place right now. So it's the presence of the Shekhinah in this place that makes it holy. It's not like objectively this ground is holy ground, but if the Shekhinah is there, it becomes holy ground. The Hevi Raya mi Yoshua, and we bring a proof, and the Medrash brings a proof from Yoshua. Sharei bi Yericho haya, he was in Yericho. The Ein Malkom Kodesh, it's not a particularly holy place, Yericho. Ala lafi sha'ach, mipnei sha'shchina negleisham. But it had a hora shah, it had a ruling for that time, since the Shechina emanated right there. So therefore, at the moment, it became holy. So understanding that it doesn't have objective holiness, what gives a place to holiness is if the Shekhinah's presence is there. So if the Shekhinah is present, then the place is holy, then you must remove your shoes. Okay? Umasha kasu v'keina kohanim, and so too, the Medrash told us, also the kohanim, klomar, v'hashto ta'ama, da kohanim ein mepnei kedusha samakom ba'amamo, el mepnei shasham eshchina negles. It says the same thing by the kohanim when they served in the mikdash. What gives the place holiness is not some objective magic power. It becomes holy, not because it's holy in and of itself. It's holy because that's where the Shekhinah is revealed. So now we know that when the Shekhinah is revealed somewhere, that place becomes holy, and therefore, because the Shekhinah is there, you have to take off your shoes. Next source, we go to Rav Shamsher Falhirsch. Okay, I'm going to stop the screen sharing for now. Those who are here, you can follow along with me in Rav Hirsch. Okay, let's keep going. Here we go. All right, Rav Shamsher Falhirsch. Do not step here, says Rav Hirsch. I'm in the middle of page two. But remove your shoes from your feet. For the place on which you are standing is holy ground, ground with a holy destiny. That's how Rav Hirsch translates or explains the basic verse. That relates, by the way, to Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel, right? Because Targum Yonasan explained, it's holy because in the future you will receive the Torah at this place and you will teach it to the Bnei Yisrael, which is what Rav Hirsch says here. It's A, holy ground, and B, it's ground with holy destiny. It is a place that has been chosen by God for the redemption and election of one particular people. Remember, where is Moshe having this meeting with God? Moshe's first encounter was Har HaElokim Chareva. What is Har HaElokim Chareva? Har Sinai. Chorev is another name for Har Sinai. So Rav Hirsch says, this place has been chosen by God for the redemption, I'm going to add in the spiritual redemption, and the election of one particular people, so as to bring through that people redemption to all of mankind. This place is not only holy ground, says Rav Hirsch, it has a holy destiny. What's the holy destiny of this place? The redemption and election of Am Yisrael. Spiritual redemption, and to bring about through that people redemption to all of mankind. Instead of, paragraph 2, instead of attempting to understand a phenomenon that is beyond your ken, God is saying to Moshe, contemplate the lofty destiny of the ground on which you are standing. Devote yourself to it with all your heart. So maybe you can understand, but particularly it seems you cannot understand matters beyond your capability to grasp. Nevertheless, contemplate the lofty destiny of the ground where you are on, the lofty destiny of Makom Har Sinai, and devote yourself to it with all your heart, which is really what Moshe did. He did devote himself to becoming a teacher of Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, with all your heart. Here, so Rav Hirsch's pshat is, what is the removal of shoes? Removal of one's shoes expresses total commitment to the significance of a given place. You become one with the ground, so to speak. So therefore, it shows total commitment to the significance of a given place. The act implies that you intend to base your personality on and derive your standing from that place alone. You're connecting with this place. I derive my standing, my being, my mission. I'm connecting to this place and this place alone. And therefore, according to Rav Hirsch, the removal of the shoes indicates Moshe's total commitment to this place, to his mission, his lifelong, well, he's 80, he's going to die around 20. So the next 40-year mission that emanate from this place, and even after his death, the mission continues through the Torah. Tzadikim b'misasam nekra'im chayim, Maseches Brachos Yod Ches. So he's always alive, so to speak, in every generation. Similarly, the Kohanim in the Mikdash, paragraph 3 of Rav Hirsch on page 2, the Kohanim in the Mikdash were obligated to serve barefoot. We already saw that in the Gemara, and we saw it in the Medrash as well. Nothing was allowed to be a chatzitza. When a woman goes to the mikvah, there's not allowed to be a chatzitza, a division, like from the word mechitza, a partition or a separation between her body and the water. So the shoes act as a chatzitza, a separation or a division between you and that holy place. When you put it in the frame of reference of mikvah, it makes sense. That will be a separation. I'm talking hashkafically, not halachically here. That becomes a division or a separation or partition between the woman and the holy place where she has just gone. You must remove the chatzitza. So Rav Hirsch says, nothing was allowed to be chotzeitz. A chatzitza intervenes between their feet and holy ground. Nothing was allowed to be chotzeitz between their hands and the vessels with which they were serving. Nothing was allowed to be chotzeitz between their bodies and the priestly garments. Sounds a lot like how a woman must prepare, by the way, when she goes to be metaher. There cannot be any chatzitza between her feet and the ground or the water, between the hands and the water, between their bodies and the water. So too, removing the shoes represents the removal of the chatzitza, the intervention. You don't want anything intervening between you and that holy place. The sanctuary, continues Rav Hirsch, is not an outwardly impressive or gaudy display. Which I find interesting because the sanctuary was extremely beautiful and full of very expensive materials. It was not a cheap construction. It wasn't from IKEA. It was the most beautiful gems and materials and leathers and hides and wood. But it wasn't gaudy. The sanctuary is not an outwardly impressive gaudy display. The impression of the sanctuary must make an inner impression on the personality. Any encounter that we have with Kedusha is meant to affect us inside, our inner personality. It must make an inner impression on the personality. If one wishes to serve in the sanctuary, says Rav Hirsch, one must attach itself to it. And once you attach to that place, as indicated by removing your shoes, removing your gloves, removing whatever is a chatzitza between the Kohen and the Bigdei Kohuna, only then can you be sanctified by it. So he says that this is how we understand Moshe's removal. If you want to attach yourself to Makom Torah, Har HaLokim Choreva, Har Sinai, if you want to attach yourself to this place of Torah, you must remove any impediment, only then can you be sanctified by it. Says the Gemara Maseches Vachim, as quoted by Rav Shamsher and Frau Hirsch, Ritzpa Mikudashas. Ritzpa, the floor, Mikudashas. It's not, again, it's not that the floor itself has holiness, like we saw in the Eitz Yosef commenting on the Medrash. It's a fact that this is a place of Gilui Shechina, revelation of the Shechina, that gives the place its holiness. Therefore, Ritzpa Mikudashas means the ground of the Mikdash, and also the place where Moshe now stood has holiness, and it sanctifies once you attach to it. Elokei Avicha. So he does not touch upon this idea of Amram dying. However, what does he say? Remember we had another kasha? Does everyone remember? In verse 6, Pasuk Vav, it says, Elokei Avicha, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. So the whole original kasha was, what's Elokei Avicha? So Rabbi Chester said, okay, Avicha means Amrav has died. So what does Rav Shamsher Falher say? Okay, Avicha, whom your father taught you to know. So he says something else. I am the God of Amram. Amram was mechanech you. Amram taught you to know me. So I introduce myself as Elokei Avicha. You will remember the lessons you learned till the age of 2 or 3 when you were in the home of Amram and Yocheved. Your father taught you to know me, so I introduce myself as Elokei Avicha. You have association with me from your father. Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. I am God, last paragraph of reverse, who revealed himself to your fathers, and I was with them through all the vicissitudes of the times. God was with the patriarchs through the ups and the downs, the highs, the lows, the mountains and the valleys. Not only was I with them during the ever-increasing success of Avram, Avram Avinu's life was one continuous ascent. Not only was I with them during the continuing and then waning prosperity of Yitzchak, but I was with the patriarchs during the plummeting fate of Yaakov. Very beautiful paragraph of Rav Hirsch. Elokei Avicha, I am the God of your father Amram. He taught you to know me. Elokei Avraham, I was with the patriarchs in the times of their greatest success. Avram's life is one continuous ascent until the climax we see when he's buying the Ma'aretz HaMachpelah from Ephron. And what do they say to him? You're a Nasi Elokim Ata B'Sochenu. You're a prince of God. Everyone recognized how princely Avram Avinu was. Be'emek HaShava, the war of the four kings and the five kings in chapter Perek Yudalit, way before the purchase of the Ma'aretz HaMachpelah, they anoint Avram Be'emek Shava, and Rashi says that they were all equal of mind, that they appointed Avram as king, so to speak, over them. So Avram had a life of one ascent. He had many nisyonos, but his star was always on the rise, if you will. I wasn't only with the patriarchs during the good times, as symbolized by Avram's life. I was also with them during all the vicissitudes of life. Elokei Yitzchak. Yitzchak had an ascent, and then the sun began to wane, if you will, during the time of Yitzchak. And finally, Yaakov. Yaakov represents the plummeting fate of the Bnei Yisrael. From the high time to the low time, how does Yaakov's life end? In Galus. And yes, he was comfortable, and yes, it was Goshen, and yes, Yosef, Yashish, Yadol, Aynecha, but nevertheless, it was the beginning of Galus Mitzrayim, it was the beginning of Shibun Mitzrayim. So God says, when am I with you? That's one of his first messages to Moshe, according to Rav Shamsher Falhirsch. Elokei Avicha, you must teach your children to know God. Elokei Avram, God is with us in the highest times. Elokei Yitzchak, in the in-between times. Elokei Yaakov, even in the times when man feels that he is plummeting down, Hashem is still with him during that time. Let us now go back to our handout. Let me just put it back on the screen for... I think this is it. 1 second. Yeah. Okay, I can't see anyone right now, so I need someone to tell me. Can you see it says Ramban here? Yes? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, turn to page 3 for those who are sitting here, top of page 3. What does the Ramban have to say about this? Let me just see something. Okay. Ramban. Al tikrav halom. What does God say? Do not come close. Lo hi, oh, the Ramban is going to address why can't Moshe come close? Isn't this Moshe who by Matan Torah nobody could be on the mountain except for Moshe? Isn't this Moshe, Vanigash Moshe al ha'arafel? Moshe goes through the three layers of clouds, Anan, Choshech, and Arafel, to enter the place where God is during Matan Torah. But here God says to him, don't come close. What do you mean, don't come close? It's not a Joe Shmo, it's Moshe Rabbeinu. Top of page 3. Al tikrav halom, to not approach close. So what is Hashem saying? Lo, yeah, so the Ramban explains, lo higia adayin lemala so hagdola b'nevua. Moshe, yes, this is Moshe, but he's not yet Moshe Rabbeinu who reached such a high level of prophecy. He wasn't on the level yet where he could go close to God, where he could approach. Ki bahar Sinai nigash al harafel asher sham elokim. At the time of Matan Torah, coming up in Parshas Yisro, Moshe was on such an elevated level that he went to the dark cloud that represents the fog, the Arafel, that represents where the Shekhinah was. However, at this point, he has, I'm so sorry, we have to end in 5 minutes, and then we have to wait till next week. Okay, Baz Hashem, we have something to look forward to all week. So I hope for you, for me. Okay, so... So that means we're just going to finish the Ramban. Be'ezrat Hashem, you're going to bring your hand up back next week, and we will continue. Okay. So by Har Sinai, he went into the thick fog. But at this point, lo higia adayin lemalasho hagdol b'nevuah, which is why God tells him, do not come close. He was not on that exalted level of prophecy. V'chein inyan hastaris panim. The Rahman also questions, why in Pasuk Vav, vayaster Moshe panav? Moshe hid his face. What does Hashem say about Moshe Rabbeinu? Panim el panim, adaberbo. Pa el pa adaberbo, sorry. And baloscha, after Mirman and speak Lashkinara. Pa el pa adaberbo, bimara velo bechidos. La madu lo yeresim, adaberba avdi b'moshe. I speak to mouth. Moshe's hiding his face. He has face-to-face conversations. Though kam navi b'Yisrael kamosho, shay yado Hashem, panim el panim. He knew God face-to-face. He spoke to God mouth-to-mouth. So how could it be? What's the inyan of Hester panim? She'adayin lo ala k'mashenemar b'utmuras Hashem yabit. That's from Baal Oscha. He was not yet on the level where he could gaze at the image or the picture, if you will, of God. So that's why he says, don't come close. And that's why Moshe hid his face. He wasn't on that level yet, says the Ramban. I'm on the top of page 3. He's hero baza. So the Ramban said he was still far away from the burning bush, interestingly. He's going to give us a little bit of geography here in terms of this revelation at Har Sinai. The Ramban says Moshe was far away from the snare, the burning bush. Nevertheless, God warned him. Kinitz kadesh kol hahar beredas hashchina al rosh hahar. As soon as God's presence descended to the top of the mountain, the whole mountain became holy. Kasher b'shas Matan Torah, just like at the time of Matan Torah. So Moshe was not so close to the burning bush from the Psukim, according to the Ramban. From the Psukim, it seems like Kli, he's here and the burning bush is here. That's what it sounds like. But the Ramban is saying, no, he actually was not so close. So then why can't he approach? Why does he have to take off his shoes? Because once God descended to the top of the mountain, the whole mountain became kadosh. Kasher b'shas Matan Torah, just like by Matan Torah. We're going to be in Yisro soon. Hashem tells Moshe, no one could approach the mountain, not a person, not an animal. If they approach, v'nafal mimenu rav, perikut tes of Yisro, many will die. They're not allowed to touch the mountain. No, why? The Shekhinah is on top of the mountain. The Shekhinah is on top of Everest. I can't go to base camp. That's right. Because as soon as the Shekhinah is on the peak of the mountain, the summit of the mountain, the whole mountain is holy. So the Ramban says Moshe was actually not so close to the snap. But when the Shekhinah descends, the whole thing is Mikudash. Moshe Bahar Haya, Moshe was on the mountain. Kisham Allah, at the time of Matan Torah, he ascended the mountain. And even here, he's on the mountain, like the Pasuk says, Vayavo al ha'alokim choreva. We know that this is taking place at Har Sinai, because Chorev is another name for Har Sinai. Okay? Vahasna, just because I mentioned it a couple of times, Chorev, the root word is charav, obviously. So what is the connection between charav and Har Sinai? Because you know, I hope you know from learning with me, I say it all the time. That Shorashim are not an accident, and words in Chumash are not an accident. So I think the answer could be Masecha Shabbos Pechas Amar Aleph. If you accept the Torah, well and good. If you don't, here will be your burial place. When it's Kafalem Har Kigigis, if you accept Mutav V'im Lav Sham Teik V'rascham. So what do I think it means? Chorev is another name for Har Sinai because there's a message in the Matan Torah and Kabbalah Satorah. If you accept the Torah, you will have life. And if you don't live by Torah, you bring spiritual death upon yourself. That's represented in the word Charev. Charev is a sword. A sword is something that brings death. Lo tivna esan gazis. And the Parshas Yisro, you can't wave a sword upon the stones of the Mizbeach because a stone brings death. A sword. A stone could also bring death. Well, then Lebarsky is buried on Nahar Herzl because they threw, I was by his grave, Hashem Yikom Damo, because a cement slab was thrown from the window in Gaza Strip and it hit him in the head and he was killed. So yes, a stone could also kill. I meant to say a sword kills. So what's the connection between Charev and Har Sinai? The Gemara on Shabbos, Pechas Aleph, if you accept the Torah, it's Har Sinai. It's the mountain of Nisim. It's a Torah that will bring the banner of miracles to your life. But on the other hand, it's a double-edged sword. If you don't accept the Torah, Sham Teik V'raschem, here you will be buried, you will bring the Charev, V'avdon, the destruction and sword spiritually upon yourself. That's just an aside. V'hasna haya b'rosh ahar. Look at this, it's very interesting. I'm highlighting it on the screen now. If you're keeping these hands, I hope someone's going to keep them. I worked so hard. Yes, you're going to keep them, Yoni, we're friends. V'has, thank you. V'hasna haya b'rosh ahar. The snare is at the top. Isn't that interesting? To me, when I read the story, it sounds like Moshe's here and the snare is here. No, the Ramban says the snare is at the top of the mountain. And Moshe's not a mountain climber. He's with the sheep at the bottom. So it's fascinating. He's standing. Now, I know it's a low mountain, but still, it's not right next to him. The snare is at the top of the mountain. Moshe's at the bottom. V'hine kulo kadosh. V'asher b'ni'ilas hasandal. Even though the snare's at the top of the mountain, and Moshe's at the bottom. Once God descends, the whole thing is kadosh, and therefore it's usher to be wearing shoes. V'kach amru b'chol makom shashchina nigleis usher ben ilas asanda. Like the Medrash says in Shmos Rabbah, which we already looked at, every place where the Shechina is revealed, it is usher to be wearing shoes. V'chein b'Yehoshua. So by Yehoshua, how he started the shir, v'chein ha-kohanim, and also the kohanim, lo shimshu b'mikdash ala yechifim. So we saw those sources, so that was a very interesting Ramban. Actually, this is on top, but the whole mountain becomes color. So my thanks to Yitzchak Yonatan, and my thanks to Rabbi Yisrael Chasser for the Dvar Torah that was really the inspiration for today's 1 hour shir. And Be'ezrat Hashem, we will continue with this fascinating learning next week. Thank you, I wish you a healthy, wonderful week, and a true Shabbat Shalom, a Shabbos of peace. Have a wonderful Shabbos, everybody. Thank you for joining both on Zoom and in person. Screen share was not the right page. I didn't see. Okay, I apologize. I hope you got it anyway. Have a wonderful Shabbos, everybody. Thank you so much.